Welcome to the Lead On Podcast. This is Jeff Orge, the president of Gateway Seminary, talking with you once again about practical issues related to ministry leadership. Well, a podcast listener sent me a recent email, which will form the beginning point of today's podcast and launch us in a direction that I think will be helpful. The listener wrote this: I noticed in your podcasts you frequently mention stories where, as a pastor, you went to people's houses. Is this a common thing pastors do, or once did? Has this gone out of trend or out of style? Is it a good thing that it has gone away, or do you think it should be brought back? Could you do a podcast on ministerial presence in the lives of people, particularly in their homes, or I would say it this way, on their turf? What an interesting email. It caused me to think about some of the things I have said on the podcast in terms of different illustrations. And when I use the phrase went to their house, I just use it as a descriptor of what I did. And I didn't realize the significance of that as this listener was hearing those words and how that contrasted with his experience of pastoral ministry today. So the question caused me to think. Did I spend more time visiting in people's homes in a previous era of pastoral ministry than pastors perhaps do today? Or is this something that is still prevalent? Or is it something that has passed out of style and needs to be reclaimed? Well, I'm going to talk more broadly in just a moment about the importance of pastoral presence and about being with people and investing in them in a very relational way. But let's talk at first just about this presenting issue of where to get that done. It is true that when I was engaged in pastoral ministry in the earlier part of my ministerial career, I did a lot of home visitation. It was not uncommon to go to people's homes to meet with them about spiritual concerns, family matters, discipleship appointments, or even counseling. Not uncommon at all. Now, that's because I typically lived in small towns or even contexts that, even though they might have been a little larger community, were still in a very rural or agrarian type atmosphere. In those contexts, people visited from home to home. It wasn't uncommon to go to someone's house, not just for church business, but just to go by and see how your friends were doing. Now, remember, this was a long time before cell phones and answering machines and things like that. So short drop-in visits were not considered inappropriate or offensive or intrusive. It was the best way to get information communicated. Just drop by someone's house on your way to the store or on your way to work. And spend 3 to 5 minutes just getting things worked out about who was going to teach Sunday school on Sunday or who was going to take care of the ushering or whether they could show up and help you with youth ministry, those kinds of things. Very common practice. And then, same thing. When someone visited a church, especially after they had been maybe once or twice and developed a little bit of a comfort level with the pastor, it was not uncommon at all for the pastor to say, could I come by your house this week? Could I stop by for a few minutes and just visit with you about our church or about your relationship with God? Now, one of the things that might be misunderstood, particularly in today's cultural context, is these visits were typically fairly short. In other words, I would not show up at someone's house to make a pastoral visit and spend 2 hours talking with them about whatever happened to come up in the course of the evening. No, it was a 10 to 15 minute conversation most of the time, and only extended if the person really wanted you to stay longer and talk about some pressing issue that they wanted to address. These short-term visits really were very effective and very conducive to not only maintaining relationships, but to prompting and moving along spiritual growth as the relationship developed. You might say, but can you really get that much done in a short visit? Well, the pastor who mentored me in this practice once told me, he said, I'm a pastor. When I arrive at someone's door, they know that I'm there to talk with them about their relationship with God or our church. And until we get to that, they know we're just wasting time. And he said, if their insurance agent came to their home, they would wait. They would expect him to talk about insurance. If their physician came to their home, they'd expect him to talk about medicine. If their attorney came to their home, they'd expect him to talk about legal issues. So when a pastor comes to the door, you expect him to talk about God and church and related issues. So he said, there's not a lot of need to spend a lot of time on chit-chat, as he called it. Just get to the point. And so after some brief greetings and welcoming into the home, just start into the business at hand and get on with what it was you came to talk about. Now, I'm saying all this because I do think this is something that has passed in some ways from the ministry context of a lot of leaders today. I know that a lot of you are listening to the podcast live in urban areas, in cities, etc. Also, people's perspective on their homes have changed. Nowadays, you really need an appointment to go to someone's home. It's really more their retreat center or their secluded place, their private place. You today hardly ever just drop in on someone unless they're a really good friend. You text first, make a connection, make sure it's okay. So I understand that what I'm talking about today really has changed. And even if you go into more rural areas or small town pastorates like I once had, even if you go into those contexts, you'll find that some of this cultural reluctance about going into people's homes unannounced or spontaneously or without invitation is not as common anymore. Now, having said that, it leads us to the larger question. And the larger question is pastoral visitation still a significant responsibility of ministry leaders? And I think the answer to that is overwhelmingly yes. Now, I realize and fully embrace the use of a cell phone and texting to set appointments, to let people know I'm coming, to make arrangements, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I get all that. But somehow, effective pastoral ministry still depends on a pastor being in close proximity to a person and talking with them one-on-one about their relationship with God, their discipleship, their spiritual questions, their spiritual growth, and related issues. Pastoral presence. Why is pastoral presence so significant? Well, it's because of the theological realities of incarnational ministry. Now, you remember from your theology class what incarnation means. It means in the flesh, coming in a person. And the incarnation of Jesus means that he, being in the form of God, as Philippians 2 says, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself and took upon himself the form of a man. That's what incarnation means. It's in the flesh. It's in the form of a man or of a human. Incarnational ministry means that you interact with people flesh on flesh, hand on hand, life on life. Why is this so important? Well, for at least three or four theological reasons. The first one is you as a ministry leader represent God to the people that you're caring for. You really do represent God. And as a part of that, you also remind people of Jesus. You are, in a sense, God and God's presence with skin on. You are someone who, when you come into the room, you represent God and remind people of Jesus. And because of that, you're also an agent through whom the Holy Spirit is working. Now, this can take serious connotations, but it can also have some humorous ones as well. When I was a baseball chaplain, for example, for 10 years, going into the clubhouses of Major League Baseball teams, and during my training for that, they said that the trainer said that a Major League clubhouse has three things: profanity, prosperity, and pornography. And he said, if you're not comfortable working in a context where all three of those things are present, you won't be able to survive in this ministry. Well, he was exactly right. A Major League Baseball clubhouse has three big things: prosperity, profanity, and pornography. But the one of those that was always the most interesting to me was how the profanity would often stop just when I walked in the room. When the chaplain arrived, players spontaneously cleaned up their language. And when one of them slipped and said a profane word in my presence, they often would turn and say, "Oh, chaplain, I'm sorry. I apologize for that." Now, not one time in 10 years as a baseball chaplain did I ever walk in the clubhouse and say, "Stop the profanity." Not one time did I ever say, "Your profanity is offensive to me and to God." Nothing like that. I didn't have to. Because I'm a ministry leader, I had a recognized position as chaplain. I was seen as in a pastoral role. When I walked into the room, I represented God, reminded people of Jesus, and there flowed through me the Holy Spirit at work. I didn't have to ask for any of that to be true. It just is true because I was the incarnational presence of God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit in that moment. So, spontaneous language cleanup often took place. "Oh, we're so sorry you heard that. I'm so sorry I said that. Apologize, chaplain, for that language." Although I never, ever said a word about those things, the presence of the Lord in that moment was felt just because a ministry leader had walked in the room. Now, that doesn't mean that it happens every single time like I just described, but every one of you who's been in ministry leadership for very long knows exactly what I'm talking about. When people clean up their language, change their behavior, improve their posture, just act differently because you came into the room. Another part of this is not only those three things about God, Jesus, and the Spirit, but another thing is that you also represent a particular church to people that you visit or that you spend time with in a personal way. I found this out when I first started out in pastoral ministry and our church started growing. Our church fairly quickly got too big for me to visit every person who was sick or every person who was hurting or every person who was in some kind of need. But fortunately, I had some good men in that church who wanted to help me, and so we organized a way for our church to have deacons that cared for groups of people in the church, and they visited them when they were sick and met their need when they were hungry or needed clothing or in some ways needed a practical assistance like moving or something like that. And we had wonderful deacons who did many incredibly good ministries with all of these different church people. But there was one recurring comment that at first really frustrated me, but later I came to own and value as an important part of connecting people to our church. This was the comment that really got to me. People would say, "Well, I was in the hospital, but no one from the church came to see me." Wait a minute. I talked to a deacon. He said he came twice. He said that on the day he didn't come, his wife came. I'm confused. I know that a deacon from our church that's assigned to care for you, that you know is your, quote, deacon, I know that person visited you at least a couple of times. But yet, the person would say, "No one from the church came to see me." Well, I heard this over and over again, and finally I understood what they were saying. "Oh, my Sunday school teacher came, that's great. My deacon came, that's great. But until the pastor came, no one from the church had really been to make the visit." Now, what the person was communicating on the positive side was this: pastors represent particular churches. And when the pastor walks in the room, the presence of that church has just arrived. Now, you may say, "Well, it doesn't have to be that way, or it isn't supposed to be that way, or those people should have been satisfied with those deacons who came to visit them." And I'm not going to argue those points with you. I think you're probably right on them. Yes, it's true. People need to learn to receive ministry from other people besides their pastor, and people need to know that the church has been to see them, even though the pastor may not have been to see them. I get all that. But rather than be critical and look at the negative, let's turn that around and look at the positive. The positive is this. As a pastoral leader, you represent a church and all the people and influence and care and support that a church can offer. You represent that when you walk in the room. Man, what a powerful symbol your presence is of your church coming into the lives of people and surrounding them with love and care. What a powerful symbol that really is. So, pastoral presence. In a previous generation expressed as pastoral visitation, but now I'm simply saying pastoral presence, being with someone, is so vital because in those moments you represent God and Jesus and the Spirit, and you represent a particular church in the moment that has brought all of its resources to bear on a hurting person who needs a touch not only from God, but from a pastor and from a church. Now, having laid out for you why this is so important theologically, let's talk about why it's so hard to do it on a practical matter. The first reason it's hard to do this kind of pastoral presence with people is because it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to drive to someone's house or place of business or other place where you can meet with them and sit down and have a meaningful conversation, work through a counseling issue, do a discipleship project, pray through an issue or a need that they brought before you. This takes time. But I remind you that people are our priority. People are what we do. And so while it does take a lot of time to be pastorally present in the lives of people, that's what we do. That's the responsibility we've been given. And it's the primary method we have for really profoundly impacting people. It takes a lot of time to have pastoral presence with people, but it is worth it because people are our priority. A second reason that it's challenging is because this kind of interpersonal interaction can be draining. When I was just starting out in ministry, I had a very gregarious youth minister's wife who loved people and was always having people in their home, going out and engaging people in their homes, having all kinds of events and activities and socials and fellowships. She was a true people person. And then one day, she said to me, "I need a break. I'm peopled out." That was a great way to turn that phrase, "I'm peopled out." What she was saying is, "I don't have anything left. I'm drained." You know, interpersonal ministry, really being with people, takes a lot out of us. It leaves us feeling drained. And that's not because the people are doing anything wrong to us. It's just that it takes a lot of energy, emotional focus, spiritual effort. It takes a lot to really be present with people so that it feels draining and, in fact, leaves you emotionally depleted. This is because making a true connection with another person often has this kind of impact. It leaves you drained. Now, again, that's not a bad thing. You are a life-giving source of energy and direction and devotion. And when people come to you and engage with you in these kind of interpersonal ways, they draw that out of you. And that's a very good thing. You give them strength. You give them encouragement. You help them to want to go on another day. You help them to want to press on through their problems. Listen, that's what we do. And being pastorally present with people is our opportunity to give out all of that to another person. So don't let it discourage you that pastoral presence and visitation or interaction is draining. That's actually a very good thing. And then the third reason it's challenging is because it can be very difficult when you have a large number of people to care for. Now, this mandates that you're going to have to delegate some, if not most, of this kind of interpersonal work with people. But you'll always need to model it by providing this kind of pastoral care and pastoral support for a small group of people that are around you. And then out of that small group that you're caring for, you can then spoke out into the lives of many, many other people who can also be cared for in a congregational context. So while it's difficult when you have large numbers of people, it can still be done. Now, we've talked about the theological reasons for pastoral presence, pastoral visitation, pastoral interpersonal investment. We've talked about some challenges to getting this done. But now, what about the benefits? Man, here's the first one. This kind of interpersonal ministry leads to emotional connections that produce deeper trust in ministry relationships. There's not anything that replaces spending time with another person to build trust with that person. When you spend time talking with someone, listening to their concerns, praying through their issues, helping them to grow spiritually, there's an emotional bond that takes place through that interaction. And this comes more than from preaching to them, or more than from calling them on the phone, or more than from providing them literature resources. No, this is perhaps the most significant way that you can build that emotional trust that's needed in a congregation, and that is spending time with people, investing in their lives, and then letting them invest in return in yours. Another benefit for leaders is that what I call leadership chips are banked for the future, meaning that you are investing in someone's life and you're placing investment chips into them, and someday you're gonna cash some of those in. You're going to go to this person and ask them to support you in a big decision. You're going to go to this person and ask them to forgive you for a big mistake. Or you're going to go to this person and in some way ask them to make a new investment of themselves in the ministry that you're leading. And in the moment that you do that, whether they are conscious of it or not, there's sort of an invisible transaction that goes on in their minds where they're deciding, do I really trust my ministry leader enough to do what he or she's asking of me today? So this kind of interpersonal connectivity builds up those leadership chips that you can then cash in at the right time in the future for what you need to accomplish. And then another good benefit of this kind of interpersonal connection is it keeps you connected to the needs of people in your ministry setting, both the practical needs and the focus needs they have. By spending time with them, it really does keep you connected. You know, it's easy to see people on a Sunday showered and dressed nicely and being on their best behavior. It's easy to see people and to be misguided in thinking what their real needs are, what they're really living through. But when you go to their home or meet them at a public place in the community, or maybe perhaps even go to where they work, when you invest yourself where they are in the sort of a natural state of life, if you will, you're going to get a very different feel for their needs. It's going to shape your preaching. It's going to shape your teaching. It's going to help you understand more of who they are and where they're coming from and what you can do for them. It will help you to have a deeper sense of the needs of people, and that will shape all the kinds of ministry you do to them. So I've whetted your appetite today. You want to get started. You say, I'd like to do more of this. I'd like to do more pastoral visitation. I'd like to be more pastorally engaged with people. I'd like to be more dependent on the interpersonal aspects of ministry. So what do I do? Well, first, understand that you can't be a ministry leader from behind a desk. You're going to have to get out and go somewhere. You have to get out and be with people. You're going to have to get out and do things that cause you to be able to engage with them on their turf. So first, make a decision. I'm going to have to engage or re-engage in fresh ways with the people I'm trying to lead. And then pay attention to certain things going on in the lives of people that always create spiritual vulnerabilities, and step into those situations with this kind of visit or this kind of interpersonal connectivity that we're talking about today. Now, what are some of these events? Well, the first one and most obvious is if they have a death in their family or a death of a close friend, step in. Another one is something related to a funeral or memorial service. Step in. I have so many stories of this. I'll just tell you one. I was coaching Little League with a guy, and he told me that his mother was ill and he might have to miss some practices and some games. I fully understood that. But a couple of weeks into the season, he said, well, my mom died. And I'm sorry to tell you this, but I won't be able to be at practice or games for the rest of this week. I just need to step out and take care of my family situation. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. When will your mother's memorial service be? And he said, oh, it's going to be 2:00 on Friday. And I thought, okay. So I just made a mental note and afterwards put it on my calendar that 2:00 on Friday, I was going to show up at this guy's service for his mother. So I went to the church. He was in a different religious tradition than me. I went to their church. I showed up at the time for the service. I sat quietly through the service. And then at the end, they had a receiving line where the guests could go through and greet the family. So I just got in the line. And when I got up to the family, my friend was looking to the right and saying goodbye to someone who was walking off the line. And then he turned back to the left where I was at the beginning of the line. And when he saw me, his jaw dropped and he just blurted out, what are you doing here? And it didn't come out like an accusation. It came out more like a question. What are you doing here? And I just smiled and said, I thought you might need a friend today. And up until that moment, he had been a very composed, 40-year-old guy. And then tears started flowing down his cheeks when I just shook his hand and said, I thought you might need a friend today. Now, that was all the ministry I offered him that day. We didn't have a long conversation. We didn't do anything else. But look, I could have sent a card. I could have sent some flowers. But I went personally. Personally. And I touched him. I held his hand and shook it. And I said, looking into his eyes, I thought you might need a friend today. And that simple sentence took our relationship to a whole nother level of emotional bonding and of commitment to each other and to an understanding from him of how to hear later me talking about God and the gospel in other contexts. So death in someone's life, funeral, memorial service, something like that, of course, hospitalizations, and then not all these situations where you step into someone's life to create this kind of pastoral presence are negative. Things like the birth of a child, adoption of a child, conversion and baptism of a child. These are all possible moments when you want to step in and provide pastoral presence and experience all the benefits I've been describing today on the podcast. There's others of these, of course, things like weddings and graduations. Positive moments to step in to someone's life. I recently received a letter. This person who wrote me had some years ago written me a different letter. The first one years ago, very critical of me. But over the years, this person and I had developed a much better relationship, I would say even a friendship. And then just recently, someone in his family passed away. And I was able to go and worked it into my schedule and showed up at the memorial service. My friend who had written me that earlier critical letter wrote me this second letter that I've just recently received that said, thank you. Your presence at the service spoke so much to us about your love for our family. That's what I'm talking about today. So the question that started the podcast, is home visitation a thing of the past? May very well be in a lot of contexts. I won't argue that point. But pastoral presence will never go out of style. And engaging with people interpersonally will never lose its value. Theological reasons, we represent God and Jesus, and we're an agent through whom the Spirit is working, and we represent a particular church family, the body of Christ in a community. Yes, it's difficult to do this. It's difficult because it takes a lot of time and it's draining and it can be very challenging when you have a large number of people to have to deal with. But the benefits are so rich. Emotional connections, leadership influence, and connections to people which shape your ministry and make it more relevant and more practical to the needs of your followers. Listen, pay attention to the opportunities in people's lives when they are spiritually open and have some vulnerability, that they would be really moved by your pastoral presence. And when that happens, don't be reluctant. Step in and watch God work through you in ways that can only happen when you're really with someone, connected relationally, in the same space, in the flesh, incarnated. Put these principles into practice as you lead on.